This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Alex Cohen.
I'm Alex Chadwick. East Oakland, downtown Detroit, LA's Boyle Heights, these are not neighborhoods where a lot of businesses go to set up shop, but maybe they should.
Several reports by the Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit called Social Compact find that businesses could reap billions of dollars by catering to untapped urban markets. John Talmadge is the director of Social Compact, and he joins us now from Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Your organization did a series of reports called drill downs, and these were done in places like Miami, Los Angeles, Cincinnati. What did you find there?
What we find in the cities that we conduct our research in is that there always are more people, more income, more aggregated income in these neighborhoods that people traditionally don't believe there are existing market conditions in.
How much extra income do these neighborhoods have, and what are they being spent on right now?
It varies from city to city. I mean, in Detroit, we found $1 billion that was being spent outside the city from residents of these neighborhoods. In Miami, we had extraordinary numbers. The area that we studied, we found a 42% higher population, but in African-American neighborhoods, we found 90% higher population the census has documented. Those makes census numbers meaningless in places like Liberty City, Little Haiti, or east side of Detroit.
And how exactly did you come upon these numbers that seem to be quite different from those found in the census?
Well, it's not a sexy thing to do, but we're data miners. So we go through and we develop our own parcel level database. You can imagine that the tax assessor knows where everybody who lives who owns property does not necessarily know anything about the characteristics of the household. The utility company may know something about the characteristics of the household because of how much water or electricity they consume. It doesn't care who owns the property. By the time you merge these databases, 30 to 50 databases, building permit data, DMV data, credit bureau data, you can begin to pick up missed units that ordinarily would not be captured in traditional market analysis.
If we could break this down a bit, if you look at it, it seems like, well, these people have all this extra income. Why wouldn't they just move to a better neighborhood? What exactly is their financial situation?
Well, in many cases, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is our ability to measure the informal economic income. It's not the illicit income. It may be that second job they have, the tips they may earn as a waitress or the money they may earn in babysitting. So in places like Los Angeles, where we just finished our most recent drill down, we found that 10% of the income was in the informal economy. That's what the difference is between living a marginal existence or having discretionary money to spend, and often is the case.
So what kinds of businesses could really have an opportunity in these kinds of neighborhoods?
Well, I would start with that there's, you know, we consider financial services and grocery, food access to be fundamental building blocks for community economic development. People have to eat, and they have to have a place to be able to deposit their money and whatnot. And there's a emerging public policy imperative that says that these businesses need to be there. You know, look at some of the emerging research on the correlation between obesity and diabetes rates and the lack of access to full-service grocery, or research on the incidence of crime and the saturation of pawn shops or payday lenders. So these are bank branches, grocery stores. These are the types of businesses that can thrive in the inner city once they have the information to know how to get there.
It seems like a lot of people, instead of spending money at these businesses because there's not, let's say, a grocery store in the neighborhood, they spend the money on bus fare to get to where they need to go. As gas prices get higher, do you think more businesses will actually open up in some of these neighborhoods?
I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, the two things that we are very confident on, and we found our principles are off from, is that the lack of information creates investment adversity. You don't invest in things that you don't know about. And so as the cost of living increases, people need to be able to go outside and be able to get their milk. It's not a matter of convenience. It's a matter of necessity. Wayne State conducted a study in Detroit, and they found that of African-American families in the lowest third of the income class, that 35% didn't have access to cars. So if you don't have a grocery store in your neighborhood, you're almost condemned to poor public health outcomes.
What about the issue of security? Many of these neighborhoods do have higher rates of crime. Isn't that a concern for a business owner?
Well, crime rates have been coming down, but the perception of crime tends to outpace the actual numbers. And so you may hear about a sensationalized murder or some sort of trend that may be occurring. But when you look at the actual numbers and where they're occurring, it doesn't tend to be in the places where you might put a grocery store. So what we try to do with our information is to counter misperceptions of neighborhoods. East Oakland, for example, the perception of crime is so high, but it's really the crime rate is lower than the city of Oakland as a whole, and it's lower than most parts of San Francisco.
So you've been mining all this data, and it all sounds very good on paper. What can you actually do to get business owners to invest in these regions?
Because of our partnerships we have, we're able to put the information in the hands of folks who are able to, you know, attract a grocery store. Columbia Heights in Washington, D.C. is an example of where Mayor Williams spent 2 years using our data to attract D.C. USA, which now has a target of Best Buy. There are multiple branches in Washington Mutual that were opened up using this data in Houston. So we're able to work with the development community in order to try to massage the information in ways that they find useful so that it leads to investment.
John Talmadge is the director of Social Compact, an organization that's been looking at the untapped potential of some of America's poorest neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you very much.